Access number 28673, Mr. Don Mitchard, Real 4. Now, we're talking about your flying training in the Miles Magister at Mere near Stoke-on-Trent in roughly July, the summer of 41.
Yes.
Now, we've talked about simple operation of simple flying manoeuvres in the air and also the review of how the flying controls work. Now, what I think is the next thing he'd move you on to, or what's the next thing you want to do?
Well, the next thing was takeoff and landing.
What's the art of taking off? Safely.
Practice, I think. Taking off is a fairly simple operation. All you do, you get onto the, well, I won't say the runway because we had no runways there, but onto your line of takeoff, turn into wind, which is because in those days we always took off and landed into wind.
Why was that? Can you just explain?
Well, because it gave you a lower ground speed than airspeed. In other words, safer. In other words, you were moving over the ground, if you're into the wind, slower. If you're going into the wind, if you go downwind, of course, you've got the wind behind you, so you've got further to go before you can get off the ground. So that was the reason. And you turn into wind, open the throttle gradually till you had full throttle, and you could feel your speed building up, and you had to keep the airplane straight. Now, with a propeller, you've got a thing called torque, which comes into... Do you know what torque is?
Just explain it.
Well, it's a twisting movement. The mechanics of a force is it's a twisting movement, and that happens because of the propeller, which actually got onto the rudder. You see, so you had to quite often give a bit opposite rudder than you're expecting because of the torque. Not so detailed in the Magister as it was in things like Spitfires and Hurricanes and all the rest of it. So. Taking off, you had to keep straight with your rudder because of that, and also to keep the front straight. And as you built up speed, so you could ease your control column forward to raise your tail. Because bearing in mind that we had a two wheels there and one at the back, not the tricycle that all airplanes have got now. So the way of taking off was to get your airspeed up and get your tail off the ground so that you were virtually on the ground straight and level. And as your speed built up and you got flying speed, in other words, you know, that you got lift, then you would, this is where the experience comes in, you know that, and you'd gradually pull it off and gradually climb away. With the Magister, of course, that was pretty well the end of it, except because you didn't have to put any undercarriage up or anything. As you got into the air, you would throttle back a bit until you got to the height that you wanted to fly at, in which case you would be setting your throttle setting at what speed you wanted to fly at. So that the takeoff wasn't a terribly difficult thing. But the difficult one was the landing.
How do you land then?
Right. Well, what you do, and I'll go through it with as you would with a Magister, I think.
That's what we want, yeah.
Yeah.
Come to the Spitfire later.
Yeah. You would decide that you were going to land. You would have, in those days, you had to get into the circuit. Now, these days, of course, airliners don't have to. They sometimes have to stack, but they don't have to do that now because they've got the slot. So they quite often can go straight in. But in the RAF, or in those days, you had to get into the circuit because every airfield had a circuit. And usually it was anti-clockwise, but not always. Depends. If there was a town over there, they'd have it the other way around, you know. And so to land, you approached the circuit, got into the circuit, and flew probably, if it was a strange airfield, you'd have to fly over the control tower to see which way they used to have a T which told you which way to land. You landed towards the T. So you'd look at that so you knew where to land.
And so then you'd land towards the cross of the T, down the
stem. That's right. And so you'd get into the circuit and you would turn across wind at the end of the, and then when you got to an appropriate, which is, this is where the judgment comes in, you turn left downwind and you're flying downwind at 1,000 feet, because a circuit on all our airfields and all airfields in this country was 1,000 feet. So you flew downwind at 1,000 feet, and then you could see where you were landing, you know, usually. So at an appropriate place, you turn a crosswind and you'd have to descend to 500 feet on that crosswind leg, and then turn into wind, and if you judged it properly, you'd be straight up the looking straight up the runway, or the landing strip as it was in those days, at 500 feet. Now, this is where a Magister had flaps. A lot of training airplanes didn't. I mean, the Tiger Moth didn't have any flaps, but a Maggie did. So you had at some speed, at some stage, and this is where the judgment comes in, decide that you've got your airspeed up down to a certain limit and you're a certain height and you're in the right way. And if you realise that you could then land, and that's where the judgment comes in, flaps down, and you usually had a bit of throttle on, so you didn't glide in, because an engine can stall if it's been just ticking over for a long time. And you just, this is where the judgment came in.
Now, what are flaps? I should have asked before. What do you mean?
Well, there's two things on underneath the wing that come down. All aeroplanes have got them. The airliners have got all sorts of different types of flaps and air brakes and God knows what. But the Maggie had straightforward flaps, the same as Spitfire. And what that did was give you more lift. So when you put your flaps down, you've got more lift, you can fly slower, in other words, without falling out of the sky. So you put your flaps down, came in, and as you got to the ground, you throttle right back, so that when you land, you would be expected to be throttled right back. And as you got near the ground, you would your speed would decay, and you pull the control column back and your tail would go down, and the ideal was landing was at what we called a 3-point landing. That was the good landing, if anybody could do it with two wheels in the back at the same time. What it is, in effect, is that you're actually stalling the aeroplane as near to the ground as you can. If you are going too fast, then you're probably going to hit the ground and bounce back up again. If you don't judge it properly and you stall too high, then you're going to go bump onto the ground.
Now, a stall is when you lose flying speed.
That's right. And as I say, with flaps down, you can fly at a lower flying speed than you can with your flaps up.
So once you've lost flying speed, the airplane basically just falls.
That's right. And that is where the trick is. Not the trick, but this, to be honest, is something that, and I think anybody who's flown airplanes will say the same, is something you either can do or can't. And I think nearly everyone on the course that I was on that failed because they couldn't land. And it probably was that they just weren't able to judge things properly.
And your instructor would be sort of monitoring what you're doing.
Oh, yes. Yes, I mean, well, for a start, you see, he'd say to you, right, we'll do some circuits and bumps, like you said.
And what are circuits and bumps? If you just explain, I mean, right. I think it sounds pretty obvious. You know.
A circuit and a landing. In other words, you take off, climb to 500 feet, turn left across wind up to 1,000 feet, left downwind at 1,000 feet, left crosswind again to 500 feet, and then straight back, and then you're coming into the into the airfield at 5 minutes, and then you're landing straight. In other words, doing circuit. The bump is a common thing for landing, actually. Circuit and landing is the correct. And what the training, you have to do a lot of that, because that's where the experience
now
comes in.
How do you take to landing?
I've always had no trouble at all. In fact, I was lucky in lots of ways that I was the first one allowed to go solo on the course. And I think mainly because of the fact that the landing was probably... It just sort of came naturally to me, I think. I was lucky.
Before we go on, because before you did the solo, when was this accident you mentioned? You said it was early. Would that be before you did? Not your accident, but there was an accident.
Oh, yes, it was an accident.
Were there many accidents, or is it just this one?
Well, the one this particular one happened when soon after I got there, and I hadn't... I just started flying, and this was particularly bad because it was two aeroplanes coming in. One was a pupil, I think, flying solo, and the other had an instructor with him. And one landed on top of the other, right on top of over a lot of houses. So, you know, it was quite a nasty accident, but these things happened.
Crashed onto the house.
Yeah. Mm. They,
were there many killed?
Yeah, there was all the aircrew, both the instructor and his pupil and the pupil were killed, and I think there were one or two in the houses that were killed as well. So, but of course, the thing is, we had no radio. You just had to try and obey the airmanship and the navigation that they taught you. And it's easy, especially with a flying school, because there's so much flying going on, and lots of people doing circuits and bumps, that you had to be, that was the real danger, was collisions. You had to keep your eyes peeled. So, but after that, we did have some accidents, but not in the vicinity of the airfield. One lad that was on the course was killed. I think he just stalled it and spun straight into the ground. You know, these things happen sometimes.
Were you warned about not turning back when you took off if you stalled?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, at what point did they tell you that? I mean, once you've gone solo or before?
Before.
Can you just explain it? Because it's something that I know from the First World War was very important.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, you see, that stalling, as you say, is when you lose flying speed. In other words, the aeroplane falls out of the sky. But whilst it's got flying speed, it's keeping up. And that is because of the... cross section of the wings, as you probably know, it gives you the lift. So when you take off, any takeoff is the vulnerable part of any flight. Even with an airliner, you'll find that with the crews, they've got a very strict procedure that they go through. You know, it's and when you if you take off when you take off. And you've got usually full throttle on a thing like a Magister or a Spitfire, anything like that. You get flying speed and you can climb, but you haven't got any spare flying speed, if you like. So if you get an engine failure when you're taking off, you're going to lose some flying speed by the fact that the engine's stopped because you're going to slow up. Now, the thing to do then is to ease the stick forward, put the nose down so that you can gain a bit of speed. You don't lose flying speed and you go straight somewhere. You might go straight into a hedge or something, but so what? Because when you're losing flying speed, you start and you turn, you lose your lift and your spin. So you're straight in. So that's why you never try and turn back.
Now, what about your first... Anything else for your first solo, do you think?
Before my first solo?
Oh, before, well, yes, leading up to it. Anything else?
No. I was going to tell you one thing about flying at Stoke-on-Trent. Because the thing is, because we had no radio, you've got to be careful not to get lost. But Stoke-on-Trent was very good because if you ever got lost, which we all frequently did, all you had to do was climb up, look around, and you saw a pall of smoke in the distance, and that was Stoke-on-Trent. They don't have that now, of course, but they didn't. They had no. And you just head for that, and you're back to your base. So that was one little tip. We learned, as I say, what you had to learn before you were able to go solo was to get out of a stall. In other words, you know, the instructor would take you up and deliberately stall it. I mean, with plenty of height, so it didn't go anywhere.
So how did you get out of the stall?
By putting the stick forward and opening the throttle. In other words, gaining more speed, but not turning, because if you did that, you'd spin.
Now, what about getting out of a spin? Because, I mean, did they teach you this?
Oh, yes. The first thing, the thing we had to do was to learn to recover from a spin. That was number one priority, really.
Now, can you explain what a spin is, why it's so dangerous, and how you get out of it?
Well, what it is it's a stall, but it's when one wing stalls. You know, you're flying along, and if you're right near the stalling speed, and you can tell because you get juddering if you're an experienced pilot, but of course pupils might not. If you're near the stalling speed, and you try and turn, put rudder or even aileron, that wing will drop, and it'll go like that. It'll spin. In other words, it's a stall with a circular motion. Now, that you've got to get out of that, but you need height to do that, because what you've got to do is gain flying speed and get the thing flying straight. Because when you got into a spin, the way to get out of it was to give full right, if you're spinning to the left, full right rudder, and then usually it stopped turning. And as soon as it stops turning, you'd centralise everything, because you'd spin the other way if you didn't. So that's where the trick of getting out of a spin was. Keep the throttle back, full opposite rudder to which way you're spinning, and as soon as it stops spinning, centralise your rudder, open your throttle and put the nose down. Get speed. Speed is everything, you see. And then you would be all right. You can get out of a spin in a Magister, no trouble at all. In fact, the one I used to fly, as my instructor reckoned, it would get itself out of the spin, but I wasn't quite sure about that. But that is the one thing that you had to learn to be able to do. You couldn't go solo unless they were satisfied that you could get out of a spin.
Now, what do you remember of your first solo? I don't know whether you remember the date. Some people tell me to do, but what was your first solo like?
It was, it was very good in a way, but and not so good in another way. First of all, my instructor, as they always say, said to me, they don't say to you, right, you're going to go solo today, or you're going to do, they try and spring it on you. So you're not got nerves, I suppose. And we'd done a couple of circuits and landings, and we were taxiing in, and he said, right, you're going to be able to go on your own now. So he said, now, do exactly as you've been doing. There's no problem. You're going to be fine. He said, but one little thing. After you've landed and you're taxiing in, don't forget to put the flaps up. Didn't make any difference to anything, except that it looked better. And I said, okay, sir. So I did my solo and everything went fine.
I
can remember feeling quite confident. In fact, I think that was the trick of being a good instructor. You knew when your pupil had got the confidence to do it. And I suddenly felt, it's like when you start driving the car, you know, for a bit the car's driving you, isn't it? Then all of a sudden you're driving the car. And it's a bit like that in an aeroplane. Well, a lot like that. And if you've got the confidence, which is what you must have, otherwise you're going to muck it up probably and panic. And the instructor should know that.
And what did you do on a first start? Was there any, was it just a circuit bump?
I had to just taxi out, turn into wind, fly off, do a complete circuit, and come in and land. And that was fine. I didn't have any trouble at all, and I enjoyed it. But what happened? I forgot to put my flaps up, didn't I? And he said, "You haven't put your flaps up." He said, "Everybody's watching." Cause people were watching because they knew I was the first one on the course to go solo. So that was a black mark for me. But it didn't. It wasn't anything dangerous at all. It was just one of those things, you know.
Yeah. So what's the next progression? You then go back into lots more dual control. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But do you carry on flying solo flights as well?
Yes. I'm trying to think. We had we did 50 hours, 25 hours dual and 25 hours solo. So once you got your first solo out of the way, and that was a big landmark because that meant you could go on carry on the course and learn all the other things. And so...
You only had a certain amount of time, didn't
you? Oh, yeah.
You had to do your solo. I don't know what it was, 10 or 12 hours, but I can't remember.
Well, I went solo after 6 3/4 hours, so I was probably one of the early, but that was just because I was lucky that I just got the ability to do it. But yes, 10 hours, if you go over 10 hours, you're pushing it a bit, really, because you should be able to do it before then. And that's when the instructor comes into it, that he knows. Funnily enough, I know I'm jumping the gun, and you won't want this, because I got a private pilot's license after at Goodwood, you know, belonging to the... And I hadn't done any flying for years, and they told me I could do a refresher course, you see. And so the young lad that was teaching me, he was more interested in what I'd done in the area.
We'll
come
back to that. You're right. I'll bring you back from that. Now, tell me... What are you learning after? So, you know, you've yeah. done your first flight. At the
yeah, you've
hours.
Learned, you've learned, well, your first flight, you've learned the controls, you're doing turns and that. You've learned how to get out of a spin, how to avoid a get out of a stall, and everything like that, the safety things. Now you will start to learn to climb up to altitude, to navigate, you know, to get from A to B and back. Aerobatics.
Well, let's talk about aerobatics. So which are the manoeuvres that they start teaching you?
The first one is probably a loop.
Now, how do you do
that's the easiest one of the lot. Well, what you do is you've got to maintain flying speed at all time. This is a must with any flying, obviously. So to do an ordinary straightforward loop, you put your nose down, open your throttle and get your speed up. You know what the airplane's speed is for doing a loop without, because you don't want to stall it. And as you get, you know, you pull your stick foot back to what you can stand in the way of G, because you if you're pushing too much G, you start to black out a bit, you know. But you get to know that.
That's the force of gravity. It's just
yeah. And so you go up like that, and you keep your control column back like this, and all the time you're going up and you're going over the top.
Onto your back.
And then you see what, eventually you see what was called the second horizon. In other words, you've lost that horizon, when you're, but you see the other one coming. And that's when you're coming down. So you then, you've got to keep straight, and you've got your full throttle. You can throttle back then because you're coming down, and you can keep your airspeed as what you want. So, but with a loop, the force of gravity keeps you in your seat. So there's no discomfort at all. You know, as you're going up, you're not going to fall out. You needn't have your straps on because G keeps you in. And the whole thing about a good loop is that you do it straight. In other words, you finish up by pointing the same way as you went into it. So that's the trick on that.
And how did you find it? Were you a good looper?
I think so. I know.
Did it have any real military purpose? Or was it just something you needed to do for confidence in the air?
Confidence, really. Aerobatics were of no great value when you started doing dogfighting.
Obviously, we'll be back to that.
Yeah, it's just to give you confidence of handling the aeroplane in different attitudes, you know.
Now, what other aerobatics?
Right, that was the loop. The next one, which was the difficult one, or the one that you most like, is the slow roll.
The slow roll.
Yes.
Now, what's that one?
Right. Well, I'll tell you what.
I can't see. Remember.
I've got a little aeroplane up there.
No, because...
Oh, I see. Right. Well, all right, okay. Oh, yeah, I see what you mean. They can't see. Yeah. Well, what a slow roll is rolling over like that and finishing up going in the same way.
Sideways. So it basically, it just goes round on itself and
yeah,
it keeps going the same
that's
way.
That's right. Now,
how do you do that?
Well, why that's a bit is difficult. It's not difficult, but it needs a lot of practice. As you're coming along, you need to keep your speed up. Once again, you've got to have plenty of speed with any manoeuvre, any aerobatic. And as you go into your roll, if you're going to roll to the right, you put your control column over to the right. That makes it go like that.
Onto its side.
Yeah. But you keep it over there, and when you get to that position, which is...
just past the vertical.
Yeah. You see, the whole thing is you've got to keep your nose up, because the with a roll, you can drop your nose, and because you can finish up by going to the ground. So as you go over like that, when you're at vertical, sideways...
The wings are vertical.
Yeah, that's right. To keep your nose up, you give top rudder. In other words, the rudders are using it that way instead of that way. Okay? And as you go further over, you've got your control column over there, and you go over on your back. And when you're on your back, you have to get your control column forward, because you're upside down now, and the nose, to keep the nose up. In other words, it's opposite to when you're the right way up. And you still keep your control column over there, and you go on rolling over, so you get the opposite. When you come out the other way, you need your rudder to keep your nose up when you're vertical the other way. And then when you straighten up, you've got to be... The whole idea of a good slow roll is that you go straight and you come out facing exactly the same way as you went in.
That sounds really difficult.
It is. I don't think difficult, but it's something you've got to learn. You know, you can't do it without getting to learn to do it properly. I mean, anybody can, well, I say anybody, you can do a roll. If you see a bad roll, you'll see it fall out of the sky. All right, they weren't at the ground, probably. And this is the, what was known in the war as the victory roll, of course, which we were told we mustn't do under any circumstances, because you might have your controls buggered up with damage.
Damage in the action. Mm-hmm. We'll come back to that.
Yeah, that's later.
What are the slow roll.
Now, the other manoeuvre that is quite often used is what's known as the roll off the top of the loop. Or it is sometimes known as the Immermann turn, which was dating back to the Royal Flying... Well, the Germans. I mean, that was one of the manoeuvres, because they used to do aerobatics in their dogfighting in that war. And what it is you do a straightforward loop down like that, come like that. And when you're on your back, when, as I say, you see a second, then you roll back straight. In other words, you finish up going back the opposite way to which you're going. And you haven't lost any height. Well, you've lost a bit of height getting up to the top, but that's the roll off the top of the loop. And you will see, if you go to air shows, you'll see they do a lot of that. The other thing was a climbing roll, which is a roll going upwards. Now, that is exactly the same as a slow roll, but you have to be more definite with keeping your nose up. Otherwise, it'll turn into an ordinary slow roll.
Now, what about side slipping?
Yeah.
Whatever's next that you think...
Yeah, side slipping, it was a thing that they taught us.
So what is side slipping?
Right. Well, what it is as you're going along like that, and you want to, if when you go, you bank like that, bank, and you keep your nose, once again, a bit of rudder, nose up like that.
So you sort of hang over to one side.
And you're slipping like that, side slipping. And you bring your throttle back so that you lose speed, and you're in that situation, and it'll slide sideways. So you can lose height quickly. Going back to when I was started doing my flying at Goodwood, I came in a bit high one day and I started side slipping to get into the right height. And these young lads said, "What are you doing?" I said, "Side slipping." He said, "You're not allowed to do that nowadays." I said, oh, sorry about that then.
I mean, it was just you put the aircraft in a certain position, this cocked over position,
yeah,
and it would just do it, would it?
Yes. Well, you'd have to reduce speed, you see. Otherwise, if you just get yourself in that position and you're going fast or got plenty of flying speed, it'll just go on like that. But you've got to bring your speed back and give a bit of top rudder so that you're like that. And the speed, in other words, you've got a bit of sideways forward speed.